Hi everyone, I'm Stephanie, a person in recovery. Wow, did not expect to be speaking off the cusp, but you know, that's how things go. I have 1 year of sobriety today on the 23rd of September 2021. I decided that I needed to get sober. So this is like a mini sort of update. It's not my first time I've done a speaker meeting, but it's definitely one that I may as well get recorded because why not? It sounds like a good idea. So for me, just a quick backstory. I'm from New Zealand. I grew up in New Zealand for most of my life. And then I was quite a queen of geographical movement. I moved between different cities and then it became different countries. I went to university and got my degree. I did my thing. But all the while I was drinking and drugging through the majority of my high school and university days. It was really great. I remember, one of my professors had just, definitely didn't trust me because I was drinking and drugging so much that it was just such a bad relationship to have. But how I got sober. Well, I first came into the program after a recommendation from my therapist. It was after a drunken incident. I mean, I'd had multiple drunken incidences that I had shared about before, but this one was pretty bad. This one had caused a lot of harm to myself, and I wasn't alone. When I had hurt myself, I'd really taken a big dive, and I remember that night quite clearly of just being it was about 2 months prior before I got sober. I'd hurt myself, I'd fallen over pretty badly and managed to hurt myself in a I told my therapist, and my therapist said to me, maybe it's time you try AA. And I went, no, I don't really want to do that. But I knew I had to. And I knew that there was something going on with myself that needed some attention. So when I first came into the program, when I first started to find out about AA, I got downloaded the AA app. Found an in-person meeting to go to. It was not far from where I was living in Vancouver, Canada. And I stood outside and watched people go in. It was a woman's meeting and I was judgy. I'll be honest, I was very judgmental. I thought that, 10 o'clock in the morning, it was soccer moms and people that didn't look like me. And I could find any excuse to not be in that space. And I didn't go in. I left. I went about three or four times to the meeting and just stood outside and just couldn't bring myself to go in that door. So I ran home and then I thought, wow, well, we're still in the pandemic, we're still in a COVID pandemic, but you could still meet in person. And I thought, oh, well, why don't I try Zoom? And so I went online, I found a queer meeting out of Vancouver and I had my camera off completely, didn't introduce myself for the first 2 weeks. And then, I eventually introduced myself and said who I was and, hi, I'm Stephanie, alcoholic. And they welcomed me with open arms. They really did. And that was a real big surprise to me. When I first kind of opened up and said who I was, they said, oh, we've seen your cat picture before, but we haven't seen obviously your face. And now was obviously the time where, I could show who I was and I was getting quite comfortable. So I found my I decided that I would go in person to an in-person group in Vancouver, and I met my traditional sponsor there. And my traditional sponsor, has done a lot, did a lot for me. I stayed in traditional for about 9 months, and did the sobriety game, as you say, for I think, I'm trying to remember now off the top of my head. But when I first met my traditional sponsor, I just ran to someone that I just heard them share and I was like, nope, that's what a sponsor is supposed to be like. I'll choose you. So I went up to him and I said, hey, would you mind sponsoring me? We sat down, we had a talk. We had a coffee the next day and eventually I decided, let's start this arrangement. So this arrangement, started off in about October of last year. And we started the 12 steps. We started the traditional 12 steps. I was told just to give it a go, see what happens in a year. Give sobriety a year. If you're not happy at the end of it, you can always get a refund. You can always find a way. You can always leave. And so I kind of took that with, okay, let's give this a shot, see how it goes. So I did the 12 steps. When it got to step three, I was very hesitant. I didn't have a belief in a higher power. I didn't have that God thing. So I was told to fake it till I make it. And I was told to basically read the big book, understand it, come back to him, and we'd talk about it. So we'd read a chapter. It wasn't a sponsorship arrangement where he sat down with me line by line. He just said, read chapter one, chapter two, chapter to the agnostics and all that, and come back and talk about it. And when it got to step three, it wasn't fun for me. I think I had faked it so much in my life with trying to be someone else that when it came to step three, I really just struggled. I really just struggled to be honest with about, you know, I had expressed that I wasn't a keen on the agnostic part. I shared that I really wasn't keen on having some form of higher power. So it was a hard time, but I got through it. You know, I was told to just ignore it. I was just told to basically just ignore it as best as I could. So I decided that, you know, I'll do my step four. And I did my step four. I think it took me about a month. It took me about a month. I did my resentments, fears, harmful actions, sex conduct, you know, and I did it. And I didn't enjoy doing it when I finally got around to it. Me and my sponsor sat in his apartment for about 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And we were just sitting there chatting away about things. And but I walked away from that experience of doing step four and feel a lot more. I didn't feel any different. I felt that I had, you know, shared all those horrible and hard things about myself that I had been holding on to, but I didn't walk away feeling any different. I just felt this, ooh, okay, that's done. It wasn't long after that I had started with, I'm trying to remember dates for some reason, but it was around Christmas time. And I had, you know, I was already in Vancouver, but I was going somewhere else for Christmas. And I thought, shoot, I'm not going to be able to make my in-person meetings that I had started to go to. So I started the Zoom chasing again, and I would attend about four or five a day. I had my notebook here. If I open it up to around that time, I was starting to find online meetings to go to around the world. So I just went on AA's intergroup website and just started looking. And eventually around Christmas, I found this thing called the little secular tab on AA intergroup's website. And I found a meeting that was called, and I was like, what's the secular tab? I didn't understand what secular meant. I'd never heard of the word before. And I thought, oh, okay. And I found one of my home groups. Well, I found one of the meetings that I eventually ended up calling my home group, which was a secular meeting. And I clicked on it. I thought, oh, wow, this sounds different. You know, they were reading a book that wasn't the big book, and they were going through it. And I thought, you know what, I'll jump in, I'll join. So I sat down and I went to that meeting, and I immediately felt a lot different than when I had gone to traditional. I felt that, okay, there was no God. This meeting specifically didn't read the steps, which was fine. And I just felt suddenly like, oh, when I could just get involved, and it just went straight to the meeting rather than how it works and the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, things like that. And I just went, okay, this feels different. And I was already starting to get, you know, I had about 3 months of sobriety up by that point, and I was starting to get itchy. I was just finding the routine of normal AA just getting boring. So I guess that's why I started clicking all the tabs. You know, I'd already gone through a queer meeting, so I was like, well, what does secular mean? So I jumped into that pond. And once I put my toe in, I couldn't let go. I started to go to different Zoom meetings, and suddenly I managed to find a way to stay sober. I was, you know, I left my, me and my sponsor, my traditional sponsor, we did 9 months together. Pretty much we got the 12 steps done in 9 months. But I had pretty much, by the time I'd found secular, I was ready to give them up. I was ready for that change of just not having to fake it till I make it, as I will come pretty much come back to because I didn't enjoy it, the faking it part. So yeah, I came into secular pretty early in 2020, and I jumped into the middle of the herd. Like, I really felt that I could apply myself through Zoom to be able to be present and do service. I wasn't doing service in any of my traditional meetings, but yeah, I definitely was in my secular meetings. I learned pretty quickly that the few things were, yeah, staying in the middle of the herd was needed for me. I'm a big extrovert. I like helping people. I like being able to assist where I can and help in any way I can. And that's been one of the amazing things about secular is I've managed to find a way to help out. When I came into secular, I also decided, you know, it was time to give up as many people, the people that were part of my past, you know, although I'd done it with my 12 steps I hadn't got rid of people that were bad for me. I still kept them around. But once I found secular and found all these other people that were doing the right thing, it changed something in me to where I wanted to have that sober life. I wanted to be sober when I was starting in AA, but I didn't know if I wanted to continue the sobriety until I really got comfortable in secular AA. And for me, what really changed it was coming into Tassanoa. That had changed the game for me when I looked it up, actually. I started in Tassanoa around early January. And I was wowed with just the ability to have a whole lot of people around me who were really kind and were willing to listen to me, you know, willing to listen to me yarn about random stuff for however long that I needed to get off my chest, compared to being in some meetings where you have a 3-minute share and that's pretty much it. That's all you can check in. I found Tassanoa and I found secular AA, and I decided that, you know, I wanted to keep this going. I wanted to start the steps and do them in a secular way. So I followed the practical 12 steps from staying sober without God. You know, I know not everyone's great on wanting to do steps, but I knew I wanted to continue doing step work after doing it through traditional AA. So I did. I came in and I found a sponsor, or a recovery partner, as one would call it, and that I was taught was in secular. And I started to do the steps. And, you know, that's another way that I have kept myself sober, is by doing the 12 steps and following the 12 traditions, because it's been amazing to sort of have that ability to just follow a program of recovery that's worked. So what has kept me sober in these months? I think I'm going to try and see if I can list off 3 to 4 things that has helped me keep sober. The first thing has been accepting that this is, for me, my life and my lifestyle. I never thought I wanted to get sober before I came in. I definitely was not keen. And I'm having this program of sobriety and recovery in my life. So accepting that this is what I want for myself has been a massive thing that's kept me sober. I did a third step using Staying Sober Without God's workbook, and I'd asked for you to kind of write a contract for yourself. And so for me, I have a contract that's literally says, you know, every day I will make a conscious commitment as to my new lifestyle of recovery. So, you know, that's a big thing for me, is if I wanted to be sober, I needed to commit to this new lifestyle and have a sober life for myself that I definitely didn't want before. The second thing that has helped keep me sober in a year is trusting in recovery. Trusting that other people have some answers that I don't necessarily have, trusting that the 12 steps, at least for me, have done something for myself that I didn't realize. Trusting the fellowship. And, you know, I'm also in multiple fellowships. I'm not just in AA, but placing trust in them and being open and willing to listen to the wisdom that people have to share about their recovery and the resources that are available, realizing that I need those resources to help me stay sober, whether that's, you know, coming to meetings or doing the steps or listening to podcasts or reading the literature, you know, trusting that whatever I read about, I will find something that will work for me. It might take me a long time and I might have to read a lot of books, but trusting that I'll find something that will work for me has also helped me stay sober. The other thing that's kept me sober from this time has definitely been realizing that my coping mechanisms that I use don't serve me anymore. That they're, you know, I don't use the term character defects, I use the term character defaults, or I've also used the term maladaptive coping mechanisms. They don't serve me anymore. They don't have, you know, they may have served me a purpose when I was in survival mode in my drinking and drugging days, when I was going through traumatic stuff that I needed to find a way to cope and address. But, you know, now for me, I realize that they have no purpose for me in my recovery, that I need to replace what they are. You know, the drinking and drugging was really good at covering up the fact that I had a fear of abandonment, that I had a fear of being alone, that I had a fear of not being good enough and not being lovable and not being worthy of people's time and attention. And in order to gain all of those things, I would drink and drug just to feel like I could fit in, that people would like me, and, you know, they would like this altered version of me. But now, since I've come into recovery, I realize that those behaviors don't serve me, and I need to replace them with healthier behaviors, you know, speaking up, talking, calling people, being active in recovery, doing service, you know, being present in my life and in other people's life, and just realizing that, you know, that sort of hard stuff about the healthy behaviors, you know, now I'm able to actually look at what my behaviors are and go, oh, okay, that's something I want to do. I want to be accountable for myself. I want to not lie anymore. I want to not cheat. I want to be an honest and truthful person to people. And that's really, really new to me, because I was really afraid of lying. I was a really good, I don't think I was a great liar, but I definitely lied a lot. And I'm still learning that sort of process of, oh, I don't have to lie anymore. I just have to be truthful. And that's definitely a big one. Another thing that's kept me sober is realizing that I can live an authentic life, and that I can have a genuine existence in this world, that I don't have to fake it, but that I have to address things that are going on for me. I have to address those resentments when they come up. I have to look at what it means to be, you know, not only sober but emotionally sober. I need to understand that it's not just about me putting down the drink and the drug, it's about me actually doing the work. I need to look at what's in my control. You know, I was wanting to control every single situation in my life, but I wouldn't actually look at what's in my sphere of control. And so trying to keep that in balance has been a really big one for me, finding out, you know, what I can control and what I can't control. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Serenity Prayer, just for reasons, but it does hold true. You know, what I can't control and what I can control are two different things. And I constantly want to try and make everything my way, but that's not always the right way to do things. That's been a big lesson. Another one is practicing rigorous honesty. That's something that's been really, really hard, just along with not just about being the truthful part, but actually being honest, you know, telling the truth and being honest. I see it two different things, but the being honest with myself about things and getting down to the nitty-gritty of what's in here, it's bugging me. You know, I might say to myself, oh, I'm irritated. But am I actually irritated? Being rigorously honest to investigate what's going on with me, what emotions am I actually feeling, rather than just labeling them as something. That's been a really big new one for me. If, you know, I have a feelings wheel now. I look at a feelings wheel to check in how I'm actually doing. So I'm not just assuming one thing about myself. I'm actually willing to challenge it. And that's a big difference. And taking accountability, that's a new one. I can easily think of that one. Is I never used to take accountability. It would be really, really easy to blame someone else, a dog, a human. It could be easy to put it on something else. But now for me, taking accountability is is a really hard one, but it's really new, and it's exciting to just be able to say, this is what's going on, or this is me, this is my behavior, and that's it, instead of me trying to find a way to bypass it or make excuses. Because I think for a long time, all of the excuses that I had were just covering up so much bullshit, and being able to take accountability for my actions and the consequences, you know. Now I can say that I've cheated, that I've lied, that I've stolen, that I've taken things, that I've been a very dishonest person in my life. But now I can say that, and I never could say that before. I always used to find it really weird when people would be like, oh, I've done this, and I would go, and I'd stand back in shock. But now I'm like, oh, hang on a second, I've done these things. I can say that out loud, you know, I'm a cheater. Hello, I can say that out loud, and now I can say that I've lied. I can say I've done this, which I never could do when I first came in the rooms of recovery. I just was so ashamed of who I was, how I was, and how things were for me. And I think that the more that I'm able to be comfortable in my own skin, I'm slowly learning about how all of those things, resentments, emotional sobriety, looking at my sphere of control, taking accountability, and practicing the rigorous honesty part has really helped me to all contribute to living this authentic life. I think I'm slowly getting to the end. I'm trying to think if there's one more, but I think the two other things is accepting help has been a really big one of sobriety in the year. Realizing that people want to help me and want to be there for me and harm me and not harm me and just love me. That's changed the game a lot. Realizing that I have friends, I have really amazing people in recovery that, you know, I didn't think I was worthy enough of anyone's time, or that I had anything to offer people when I came into recovery. I thought, you know, I'm just one person trying to get sober. I didn't think there was all this other stuff to it. But being able to sit down and realize that people like me for me has kept me sober, because I'm not pretending to be someone else. I'm just this person in my own skin. And that's been so new for me as I continue on this journey, because I never liked who I was. I never liked who I was when I was out there drinking and drugging. I just always wanted to find a way to fit in. I always wanted to find a way to make things better in my life. I always wanted to find a way that I could please people. And now I don't have to. Now I just have to be comfortable in my own skin and accept myself, flaws and all, warts and all, as people say. And this is who I am. And the fact that people not only like me, but that I like me, you know, that I actually like who I am today after a year of being in recovery. I don't want that. I don't want to go back to my traditional sponsor and say, I'm going to leave now, because it's the last thing I'd want to do. Because being in recovery has kept me sober for a year, and being able to learn who I am and really open that door that I was so scared of. You know, I was so scared of addressing why I have these fears, or why I have these big parts of me that I never wanted to show anybody. But now I sort of sit here and I go, wow, no, this is who I am. I like who I am now today. I'm liking this person that I couldn't even look at in the mirror when I first came into recovery. I just couldn't. I would hate looking at myself. And now I can do that. I think the final thing that I can think of that's kept me sober or has helped me in my sobriety, or, you know, how I got sober in a year is by having people around me that I know will always have my back. I didn't realize what true friendship was when I came into recovery. I thought that the friends that I had, outside in the normie world were not my friends. They were people that were really great at doing the things that I also would do. They were great at drinking and drugging and lying and doing all the same things. And I thought that, you know, these people were my ride or die friends. And, you know, even though we'd gone on so many adventures traveling together, I always thought that they were my people, that they were always going to stick by me. But actually, the moment I decided to get sober, they all left. They all just kind of went on their own. And it made me realize that, no, I didn't have true friends after all. I had people that were just, I don't want to say fake because I don't want to put them down, but they weren't real people. They weren't there when I needed them. They weren't. And it made me realize that the true friends that I do have are actually people I found in recovery. You know, I'm the person where I don't associate with anyone from my past anymore. You know, my family, my parents are around, sure, but any friends that I'd have previous to that, no. No one from my university days, one person from my high school. But other than that, I've given up all my friends that I used to have, and I only just stick around people that I've met in recovery. And that's kept me sober, is being around all these people. And having those amazing connections have made it so much more easier to, A, accept that I'm in recovery, but B, to accept that I have amazing friends that I can count on. So, yeah, I think that's nearly about it. If I can think of anything off the top of my head, I think that just in the year, how I've managed to stay sober is by being in the middle of the herd, staying around, not picking up that first drink, because I do realize that the first drink will get me drunk, and the first drug I pick up will just get me completely off my face. And realizing that I do have control. I have control over more things than I care to admit sometimes. And that I have friends, people that love me. I have support where I need it. You know, I didn't do rehab or anything like that. I just came into the program after a recommendation, and I've chosen to stay, chosen to leave those destructive patterns behind. And I've accepted that this is who I am, that I can't change who I am. I'm nearly 30. I'll be 30 next year. And just being able to say that I am starting to love myself as who I am and how I am, rather than running away from myself. So yeah, I think that's all I've got. I think I've answered the question of how I've stayed sober for a year. I don't want my money back. I don't need money back. I don't need anything back. I'm happy to be here. I love being in Tasanoa. I love this family so much. And I love the fact that I get to see all of you every single day, because you all keep me sober and remind me that, you know, I'm worthy of love, and I'm worthy of having myself be comfortable in my own skin. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.